So good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the bidder information session for the September 2024 solicitation. This is the 8th and final solicitation under PECO's 5th default service program, or DSP-5 as I'll call it in this presentation. My name is Katie Orlandi. I work for NERA Economic Consulting. NERA serves as the independent evaluator for PECO's DSP-5. With me today are representatives from PECO who will be available to help answer any questions you may have at the conclusion of the presentation. So in today's presentation, I'm going to provide the relevant background information on DSP-5, details on the qualification and bidding process, and of course, I'll also cover solicitation-specific information, including the products available. We'll go through a calendar with the deadlines. So all lines have been placed on mute, but you can ask written questions throughout the presentation. If you want to ask a question, you'll locate the Q&A panel on the right-hand side of your screen. Type in your questions, select all panelists in the drop-down, and then hit enter. You can also use Q&A to get in touch with us if you have any technical difficulties, and someone's going to be in touch. So before I start, I want to note that any statements herein describing or referring to documents and agreements are summaries only, and they're qualified in their entirety by reference to the governing documents. These governing documents are the Pennsylvania Public Utilities Commission order related to PECO's 5th default service program dated December 3rd, 2020, the RFP rules and the addendum to the RFP rules, which were posted on July 30th and August 13th, respectively. Also, the PECO Energy Company Pennsylvania Default Service Supplier Master Agreement, or Uniform SMA, as I'll refer to the document in this presentation, and that was posted on July 30th. So all of these documents are currently available on PECOProcurement.com. The regulatory documents are posted to the regulatory page, and then the RFP documents and contract is posted to the supplier information page. So as I mentioned, NERA serves as the third-party independent evaluator for the solicitations under DSP-5. Our role is to ensure a transparent process for the RFP. So specifically, we're the main point of contact with bidders. We ensure that the rules that were approved by the Commission are followed and the qualifications are evaluated equitably and fairly. We will be the ones to evaluate the bids on a price-only basis, and we also present the results to the Commission. So the agenda for today's call is as follows. In the first half of the presentation, I'm going to provide background on DSP-5 and the products available in the September solicitation. I'll then provide an overview of the RFP process, the contract, and the rates. And then in the second half of the presentation, I'll go into the details of how to qualify to bid and to submit your bids on the bid date. I'll also have a short overview on the RFP website and how you can get in contact with us. And at the end of the presentation, we'll answer any questions that are submitted. Again, you can ask questions through the Q&A. You could also email us to our general email box, PECOProcurement@NERA.com. So under DSP-5, PECO procures full requirement service for their default service customers. As listed here in bullet 3, full requirement service includes energy, capacity, ancillary services, certain transmission services, and alternative energy portfolio standard, or AEPS, requirements. Default service customers are those customers that do not elect to take service from an electric generation supplier or return to PECO after receiving service from an EGS. Under DSP-5, solicitations were held in each March and September from 2021 to 2024 for a total of 8 solicitations. So this is the final solicitation under DSP-5. PECO filed a petition with the Commission for their 6th default service plan to continue with this biannual auction process and to continue procuring full requirements products beginning in 2025. So this proceeding is ongoing and the Commission decision is expected later this year. In this September solicitation, products are going to be available for 2 of PICO's 3 customer classes. So first, the residential class, which consists of all residential customers, and second, the small commercial class, which consists of commercial customers that are less than 100 kW of annual peak demand. So for each class, the default load is divided into a number of tranches so that each tranche represents a fixed percentage of the load for the class. So for the residential class, there are a total of 62 tranches, and each tranche represents 1.6% of the default load for that class. There are 24 tranches for the small commercial class, and each tranche represents 4.17% of the default load. This slide here also provides not just the size of a tranche, which you need to know, but also the total and default peak information and an approximate megawatt measure for each class. And this data was updated as of July 2024. So the naming convention for each product available in the solicitation is as follows. Each product has 3 labels. First is the customer class served. Second is the length of the supply period. And third is the date of the start of the supply period. So there are 2 products available in this solicitation for the residential class. There's a 12-month and a 24-month product. The supply period for both of these products starts on December 1st, 2024. Same for small commercial. The available tranches are for 12 and 24-month products starting December 1st, 2024. There are load caps that apply, so the supplier cannot supply more than 50% of the default load for a class at any point in time. The load caps in this solicitation do account for products won in prior solicitations under DSP-5 and that have a supply period that overlap with the products available this time. Suppliers for the residential and small commercial classes are paid on a fixed price basis, which is based on the supplier's average winning bid price for each megawatt hour of load served. So the bid price submitted is an all-in price. On this slide, we have the available number of tranches and the load cap description for the residential class. So for the 12-month product, there are 12 available tranches. For the 24-month product, there are 9 tranches available. And so as I mentioned before, there are a total of 62 tranches for this class and a load cap of 50%. So in the case of the residential class, load caps are calculated as 31 tranches, 62 times 50%, minus the tranches that a supplier is currently serving for the products with a supply period that overlaps. And these products that overlap with the upcoming supply period are listed here on the table in bold. So any current default supplier serving these products could use this table here to figure out if you have a bidder specific load cap. Also, when we distribute the bid forms during the process, the bid form will account for the load caps or will let the bidder know whether they have load caps. Same thing for small commercial. The load caps are calculated the same way. There are 2 products available, 6 tranches available for the 12-month product, 3 tranches available for the 24-month product. Again, there's a total of 24 tranches for this class, so suppliers could be constrained on the number of tranches they can bid by 12 tranches minus the number that they're currently serving for the products listed here in bold. PJM's base residual auction for the 2026-27 delivery year was delayed due to proceedings with FERC and will not be held prior to the bid date in September 2024. The BRA for the 2026-27 delivery year would provide a visible capacity price for the last 6 months of the 12-month products. And so this is a note that bidders that are offering to supply the 12-month products are entirely responsible for any uncertainty related to the lack of visibility of the capacity price for the 26-27 delivery year. That completes the overview of the products. And in this next section, I'm going to give an overview of the stages of the RFP process. I'm going to start off here with the calendar. So the RFP process is going to kick off next week with the opening of the Part 1 form and then proceed over the next 4 weeks. The application process is in 2 parts. First, applicants will submit the Part 1 proposal with their qualification materials beginning August 29th. That's when the Part 1 form becomes available. So that's actually next Thursday. The Part 1 must be submitted by noon on the Part 1 date on September 10th. Applicants that qualify will be notified that they can submit a Part 2 proposal on the Part 1 notification date on September 12th. Then the following day, applicants can begin submitting their Part 2 materials, including posting pre-bid security. The Part 2 proposal due date is September 19th, there in blue. Bidders are notified whether they've qualified to submit bids on the Part 2 notification date on September 23rd, and then the bid date is the next day on the 24th. By September 25th, the day after the bid date, we will submit our report to the RFP results to the commission, and then the commission will render a decision to accept the results by close of business on September 26th. The RFP results on the bid date are contingent on final PUC approval, as I mentioned. So we submit a confidential report on winning bids to the commission by the day after the bid date, and then the commission has 1 business day of receipt of that report to issue their decision. And then 15 days after the bid date, some information, this includes the average winning bid price, is posted to picoprocurement.com. So the proposal process is entirely online. You'll submit the Part 1 and Part 2 materials through online forms or by email. These materials include providing required information about the bidder and supporting documents. Bidders are also required to upload or email signature pages that we refer to as inserts. These inserts are provided by us in Microsoft Word format, and each insert contains instructions to complete and sign the insert. The pre-bid letter of credit must be used for posting pre-bid security with the Part 2 proposal, must be submitted as an electronic PDF file to picoprocurement@nero.com. So as I mentioned, both the Part 1 and Part 2 proposals require submission of inserts. These inserts are already posted to the website. Applicants that are new, meaning they have not qualified in a solicitation held under DSP-5, will need to download the zip file labeled P1 Inserts New Bidders. Applicants that have qualified in a solicitation under DSP-5 but did not have winning bids will use the zip file labeled P1 Inserts Previously Qualified. And applicants that have had winning bids under DSP-5 should use the zip file labeled P1 inserts default suppliers. And it's important to start with the right set of inserts. So if you have any questions about your status, do please get in touch with us. Also, currently posted, you can see at the bottom of this screenshot is a zip file labeled P2 inserts early. So this contains the inserts that require a signature and are due with the Part 2 proposal later. We post them now in case it's easier for you to get the officer who needs to make the signatures at the same time. So you can download this P2 zip file and you can submit these Part 2 inserts with your Part 1 proposal for early processing. So if you're a new applicant and you have not yet registered for an account to access the online forms, you should do that now. You'll need an account to make a request in order to get the email to activate your account. So you register by going to picoprocurement.com and clicking on the Contact Us link on the left-hand side, and then clicking on the Register for an Account. You could also send us an email if you'd like with the information that's requested here on this slide. And it's the individual that registers for an account that's going to receive the email from us prior to the Part 1 window opening with account activation instructions. So current account holders do not need to re-register through the website or by email. Those are applicants that qualified to participate in a solicitation in 2022 or later, or account holders that registered in 2022 or later. So for a bidder that qualified to participate in a solicitation in 22, 2022 or later, it's the representative that's going to get an email with an activation link prior to opening of the Part 1 form. If you're an account holder because you registered but you've not participated, then it's the individual that registered at that time that's going to get an automated email from us with an activation link. At that time, we're also going to send instructions so that you know how to access and complete the online forms. That'll come again before the form opens, and it'll include screenshots to help you walk through the steps of activation. Once your account is active, you can navigate to the online forms directly. The URL is dspproposal.com. You can also access the proposal site through the RFP website by clicking on the links at the bottom of the left-hand navigation bar or at the top of the column on the right. So this next section is going to provide some details on the contract and rates. So PICO uses the uniform SMA that was developed for DSP-3 with some EDC-specific provisions included. Appendix D to the SMA includes the PJM billing statement line items, and it will identify for you the responsible party, either PICO or the default supplier for each item. Default suppliers must complete an Appendix H each year. Appendix H is the form of generation supply report, and it requests a percentage breakdown of the energy supplied by source for the year. The completed appendix should be provided to PICO by March 31st of each calendar year. Also, beginning in 2024, bidders that adhere to the ISDA-US Day protocol may elect for both the bidder and PICO to execute Appendix I at the point of contract execution, and that's done in order to incorporate necessary terms of the ISDA-US Day protocol. This slide provides the credit requirements under the contract. So for the fixed price products, which is what we're procuring for small commercial and residential, credit exposure to PICO is based on a calculation of mark-to-market exposure that's net of accounts receivable or accounts payable to the supplier. Whether a supplier has to submit financial guarantees during the term of the SMA is going to be dependent on a credit evaluation that's fully specified in the contract. So each bidder will receive the results of a credit evaluation based on their financials and ratings provided in the proposal process with their notification, which is, I think, a week or more ahead of contract execution. If a financial guarantee is required, it can be posted in the form of cash, a letter of credit, or in the form of a guarantee. And there are standard forms of both the guarantee and letter of credit that are provided as exhibits to the contract. Default suppliers are responsible for providing alternative energy credits during the term of the Uniform SMA for PICO to comply with its Alternative Energy Portfolio Standards Act, as well as other orders, regulations, and rules. So an alternative energy credit is issued for each megawatt hour of generation from a qualified alternative energy system. All solar credits must be compliant and eligible to be retired in Pennsylvania in accordance with Act 40 and in accordance with Act 114. If any requirement under the AEPS Act changes during the term of the SMA, it is the default suppliers that are responsible to comply with new obligations. And the current obligation for each type of AEC is provided here at the bottom of the slide. And so you know, during the transaction confirmation, if you do have winning bids, you will be required to specify the average cost for each type of AEC, non-solar tier one, solar tier one, and tier two. Under the terms of the Uniform SMA, a default supplier's AEPS obligation may be reduced by a number of AECs allocated by PICO. The number of AECs per tranche that PICO will be allocating towards the default supplier's obligation is provided here on this table. Notably, any PICO AECs that are allocated remain the property of PICO and are not transferred to the supplier. This slide provides just some high-level details on rates. So the default service rates for a class are calculated on the basis of prices determined through this RFP and prior solicitations, and incorporate quarterly true-up and administrative costs. For the residential class, rates also include purchases by PICO to serve approximately 1% of the default load. In September 2021, PICO introduced time-of-use default service rate options for their residential and small commercial default service customers with smart meters. The time-of-use options will not be applicable to customers in PICO's customer assistance program. Also, there's a default service rate calculation model that's posted to PICO's website. That model is accessible through the link here provided at the bottom of the slide. So on this final slide in this section, we provide some details on PICO's agreement with the New York Power Authority. Under a multi-state agreement, PICO receives for the benefit of its residential customers an annual allocation of capacity and associated energy from the St. Lawrence Hydroelectric Project operated by NYPA. The allocation is dependent upon the number of residential customers that PICO serves, and it's 5.848 megawatts for energy year 2024-25. Suppliers' residential tranches are the share of the default load for the residential class that excludes this allocation. Okay, so this next section, I'm going to provide the details on how to qualify. So the RFP process will proceed through several stages. The first stage is the optional alternate guarantee process, which I'll discuss on the next slide. The first deadline related to this process has now passed. So next, applicants that would like to submit bids must complete the next stage, and that's the submission of the Part 1 proposal in order to meet qualification standards under the RFP rules. So the Part 1 proposal materials are submitted during the Part 1 window and no later than the Part 1 date. Applicants that qualify pursuant to a successful Part 1 can then submit a Part 2 proposal to be eligible to submit bids, and the Part 2 proposal includes submitting pre-bid security in the form of a letter of credit. Again, those materials are submitted during a Part 2 window and no later than the Part 2 date. Then qualified bidders that have a complete Part 2 can submit their bids during a 2-hour bid window on a dedicated bid date. And bidders will have the opportunity to practice their bid date procedures during a training session that's held, I think, about 1 week before the bid date. So as I mentioned on the prior slide, deadlines related to the alternate guarantee process, which was entirely optional, have now passed. This is a process for RFP bidders with corporate policies that preclude them from using the standard guarantee appended to the contract. In this case, an RFP bidder can request PICO review and consider an alternate form that's used by their guarantor in ordinary course of business. Such a request was due by August 13th. Separately, RFP bidders will still have the opportunity to propose modifications to the standard guarantee that's appended to the contract. That modification request process will happen during Part 1. So for purposes of completing the Part 1 proposal, there are three types of RFP bidders considered. The online Part 1 form is dynamic, so it provides for an abbreviated process for current default suppliers and previously qualified bidders, meaning that these bidders will be able to skip sections or items that they've already completed in a prior solicitation. So the three types of bidders are new bidders that have not submitted a successful Part 1 under DSP-5, previously qualified bidders that have submitted a successful Part 1 but have not won tranches, and then default suppliers that have qualified, won tranches, and executed the uniform SMA with PICO under DSP-5. And so as I step through the qualification requirements on the next couple of slides, there will be a note to sort of let you know which bidders must submit the information and documentation. So for Part 1, there are 6 discrete requirements, and this slide covers the first 3. So first, applicants must submit contact information for the bidder, an officer, a representative, and up to 3 additional nominees. So the officer must be able to bind the bidder and will make all required certifications in the Part 1 and Part 2 proposal. The representative will serve as the main point of contact for the bidder, and nominees are individuals that will be copied on all correspondence from us, and that includes receiving materials that are considered confidential. Second, bidders must submit quarterly financial and credit information. So again, it's the most recent quarterly financial statements and the most recent credit ratings for the entity they're relying on. There are some additional requirements for bidders relying on an agency agreement, including naming the principals and providing a copy of that agreement. Third, bidders may be required to submit information to populate the contract should they have winning bids in the solicitation. So next, the officer must make representations and certifications, including accepting the terms of the contract and agreeing to the RFP rules. Fifth, bidders that are foreign entities or relying on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor or principal will be required to make additional representations and also have an opportunity to submit drafts of some additional documents that are required under the contract. And these additional documents that are required are listed in both the RFP and the contract. Lastly, there's going to be a section in the form to explain why any of the required information was not provided. So the Part 1 proposal, again, is due by Tuesday, September 10th, and you can submit the online form and required supporting documentation anytime from the opening of the form. We're going to open it on August 29th through the deadline of September 10th. Importantly, the Part 1 proposal is a bidder's opportunity to request modifications to the standard pre-bid letter of credit that's used to post financial guarantees with the Part 2 proposal, and to both the post-bid letter of credit and standard guarantee form that are appended to the contract. This process is entirely optional. If you do request modifications from your bank, then responses to a request to the pre-bid letter of credit and standard guarantee are provided back to you within 2 business days, and responses to requests related to the post-bid letter of credit are provided back within 7 business days. So if there are any newly approved modifications in this solicitation, they're added to a list of already approved modifications that are posted to the website, and any bidder can use any of the approved modifications that are provided on that list. And so there is a preliminary list posted right now, and you can consult that. You can send that to your bank so that they know what type of edits they could make, and they can see which edits are not there and they'd like to ask PICO to review. So when you submit your online form, we will review your proposal promptly. If we find deficiencies in any of your materials, you'll be advised on the same day if materials were received before noon, or by the next business day if the materials were received after noon. And a deficiency notice is just going to list the items that require clarification or are missing, and then generally you'll have till the deadline of the Part 1 proposal, or if you submit closer to the deadline, just 1 business day to respond to a first request. And then once all the materials are complete and compliant with the rules, we'll issue you a complete notice. So a bidder that completes the Part 1 proposal will be notified whether they've qualified to submit a Part 2 by the Part 1 notification date on Thursday, September 12th. And the Part 1 notification is a package of materials that we send to you. It includes the credit assessment based on the financials submitted with the Part 1, a customized bid form and instructions for bid submission, and also confidential login information so that you can test the secure transfer system during bidder training, and then confidential login information to use on the bid date so that you can submit your bids. So moving to Part 2 requirements, all bidders will be required to submit an online form with supporting documents just like Part 1. The required documents include additional certifications and representations made by the officer. some RFP bidders will have some additional requirements in part two. For example, bidders that are not default suppliers and are relying on the financial standing of a guarantor will be required to submit a letter of intent to provide a guarantee that's signed by the guarantor. Bidders submitting a proposal with foreign entity as bidder, guarantor, or principal will be required to submit executed versions of the additional documentation required by the contract. Additionally, and the largest component of part two is that bidders must submit a pre-bid letter of credit that's submitted electronically as an electronic PDF file by email to the independent evaluator only using our email address here, picoprocurement@nera.com. And so the part two proposal is due by Thursday, September 19th, and bidders are encouraged to submit the proposal materials early in the part two window. Don't wait until the deadline in case you need an amendment to your letter of credit. So the pre-bid letter of credit must be in an amount of $250,000 per tranche bid on the residential and small commercial products. So that means that the maximum amount to post for a bidder planning to bid on all tranches available is $7.5 million. But please note that depending on your bidder's specific load caps, based on the number of tranches currently being served, it is possible that you will not be able to bid on all of the tranches available. All bidders must use the standard form of pre-bid letter of credit posted to the website, or you can incorporate only approved modifications that are provided on that list of acceptable modifications. So that concludes the section on qualification. This next section has about 5 slides on the bid submission process. So first, what is a bid? A bid is a price in dollar per megawatt hour for one tranche of a product. It's rounded to the nearest cent. The officer would have certified during the proposal process that it's binding until 6 business days after the bid date. And lastly, it must be supported by sufficient pre-bid security posted with your part two. Bids are evaluated by the independent evaluator on a price only basis. This slide provides a screenshot of the bid form. So each bidder will be provided with a bidder specific bid form that accounts for any bidder specific load caps. You'll enter the bids in the blue cells in section two. Each bid is for a single tranche. The bid form will provide running totals for you for the bidder's convenience, and it'll perform a check at the bottom that load caps have not been exceeded. Bids must be submitted between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. noon on Tuesday, September 24th. They're submitted online through a secure file transfer system, and then we will call you and confirm receipt within 30 minutes. Bidders will have an opportunity to correct errors if the bid form is not complete and compliant with the rules. And so for this reason, bidders are encouraged to submit early in the window. You are provided a minimum of 10 minutes to resubmit a non-conforming bid form if there are errors found when we call you. By 3 p.m. on the bid date, we will determine the provisional winning bids, and we will inform bidders whether or not they are provisional winners and which bids are provisionally winning bids. And I say provisional because on the bid date, the results do remain subject to commission approval. So the post-bid process is outlined here on this slide. Again, bidders are notified by 3 p.m. on the bid date if they're provisional winners. By the next day, bidders with winning bids must provide all information to prepare the contract and guarantee if this information was not provided in part one. By September 26th, that's 2 days after the bid date, the commission issues a decision on the results. At that point, PICO will execute the contracts, guarantees, and transaction confirmations, and then they will email the documents to the winning suppliers by Monday. Suppliers must execute the contract documents using a digital signature and then return them by email by 2 p.m. the following day, that's Tuesday. Additionally, suppliers that are required to post security under the uniform SMA will have to do so by close of business on October 1st. 15 days after the bid date, some key information about prices is released. This information includes the weighted average winning bid price by product and also the number of tranches of each product that was procured. And notably, the names of winning suppliers are not released. So in this final section here, I have 2 slides pertaining to the RFP website. The RFP website is your central source of information. It contains the supplier and regulatory documents. There's a data room with historical load, PLC customer count data, and more. There's a contact us page to register to receive an email or to receive email announcements. We send them when deadlines are coming up. This is also where you, of course, register for an account to submit a proposal. There's an archive section on the website, and that'll contain all the past documentation and also the results of prior solicitations. If you do have a question as you're filling out the form or reviewing documents, do please send it to us. You can submit your questions through the website or by email to picoprocurement@nira.com. We'll respond to your questions generally within 2 business days, and then the question and answer are posted as FAQs on the website without any identifying information. And so there are a large list of FAQs that are already available from past questions that are still helpful. You can visit the website and look under supplier information in order to review these past FAQs. So that concludes the presentation portion of the webcast.